She came walking up the walk toward the church building in her mini skirt, and she knocked on the glass, and the church secretary went out and took her request, and she said, "Is this Sam's Town?" And she was referring to the church building in South Haven, Mississippi, where I preach. And the secretary informed her that no, that our church building wasn't Sam's Town, the casino location that she was looking for. But as it turns out, they were housing some individuals in a building adjacent to us and training them as to how to be involved in the casinos that were newly opening up in the Mississippi area. I live about 25 miles from Tunica. How many of you have heard of Tunica just by show of hands? It's interesting. You would never have heard of Tunica more than likely were it not for the fact that it is now the third largest mecca for gambling in the United States for sure. Only behind Las Vegas and Atlantic City, Tunica is fast approaching the status of being one of the most popular places to gamble in the U.S. And it's unfortunate to consider that gambling was approved in that county, and Sam's Town was going to train their employees across the street from us. And so they were using our parking lot to do this. They were having their individuals park in our parking lot. And I called the elders and I said, "I'm assuming that I know the answer to this question already, but just to double check, do you want the employees from Sam's Town being able to use our parking lot while they get trained to teach people how to gamble and bilk people out of their money?" And they said, "Absolutely not." And so I went over in a nice way and I said to the gentleman there that was doing the training, I said, "Sir, we're going to have to ask your employees to move their vehicles from our parking lot. I hope you understand we have a very strong philosophical difference with you about whether gambling even needs to be in this county or not, or anywhere for that matter." And I'll never forget his response. In very cordial terms, he didn't get mad. He completely understood. He looked at me and he says, "I will have them move their cars right away. I understand gambling and the church just don't mix," quote unquote, is what he said. Now here's a man that was not a preacher. He was not a member of the church where I preached. I don't know what religious background he may or may not have had, but he was able to grasp the concept that gambling and being a member of the church are simply in opposition one to another. There's no way that you can join those together successfully. I would like to stand here, therefore, and tell you that no member of the church where I preach has ever set foot in the casinos in Tunica, but that would be a lie. I'd like to stand here and tell you this evening that no member of the church would ever buy a lottery ticket, but I know that would be a lie. And you can think about all different kinds and forms of gambling, and when you think of gambling, it's not just the casinos that we're discussing tonight. I like the definition of gambling that I found in an article that I read. It said this: risk-taking when something of value is transferred from one person to another on the basis of chance. It's the risking of something of value for hope of gain, generated by the losses of someone else participating in a similar risk. Now look at these necessary elements to what constitutes gambling. It includes risk-taking, but it's not confined to that. Some individuals want to act like, well, when a farmer plants his crops, he's taking a risk that he's going to really have a good harvest, and if it's okay for him to do that, it's okay for me to put some money in the one-armed bandit. It's taking a risk either way. And they try to make those two parallel. Some individuals will say, look, when you get out and drive on the highway, you're taking a risk. And they say, if you can take a risk in doing that, you can take a risk in buying a lottery ticket. And they act like those two are on equal ground and footing. There's a difference between risk-taking, which all of us engage in one form or another. I bought a pen some months back that I really, really like. When I bought it, there was the risk that I would lose it like I've lost about every other pen that I've ever owned. You know how that goes. But I was willing to buy this pen because when I paid my money, I had something tangible that came about as a result of my transaction. Gambling, as someone said, is a good way of getting nothing for something. You put money down, and so often you walk away with absolutely nothing. not far from where I live. I mentioned to you Tunica. True story. A man went there and lost just about everything he and his wife had in the bank. He panicked. He went out on the parking lot and sold his high-dollar vehicle for an outrageously low price for cash so that he could turn around and go right back into the casino and buy some more chips to use to try to get his money back. And all he ended up doing was losing everything that he just sold his car for. So now he's lost all of the money in his bank account. He sold his car for an outrageously low price. He's now lost all of that money. And he has a wife at home that he's got some explaining to do. He's got to explain some things to her. So what's he going to do? He went outside and he found a telephone pole. And he smashed his head into the telephone pole hard enough to make himself bleed profusely from the forehead. He ripped his clothes. He called his wife and said, "Honey, I've been carjacked. They took me to the bank. They made me take out all of our money. And they took the car and they beat me up in the process. Will you come pick me up?" Now, it didn't take long for her to figure out he was lying, because she learned that the bank had a limit on how much you could take out in any one given day, and that the math just didn't add up. And so she started putting two and two together and figured out that he was just lying. What in the world would possess this man to do something so drastic as to take his head and slam it into a telephone pole so that he could pretend as if he'd been robbed? Gambling will take you further than you ever planned to go if you dabble in it. And I recognize that I'm speaking to a group of people here tonight that probably almost to a man is not guilty of gambling, has not ever been guilty of gambling, or certainly not while you've been a child of God. But I don't know. I really don't know the makeup of any crowd to whom I'm speaking. Plus, I think these are being taped. They're being videoed. We have no idea who may listen to this. So I'm going to plead as earnestly as I possibly can that if you are involved in gambling of any form, if you ever have been involved, if you're tempted to be involved in the future, I'm begging you to consider that gambling will take you further than you ever planned to go. Down the road from the church building where I preach, there used to be a Church's Fried Chicken. The man who owned the Church's Fried Chicken was the owner of that franchise. And he started taking money out of the till and started going down to the casinos and spending his money recklessly. He got in such deep debt that he was robbing the store practically blind and trying to fudge the books to make it look like he wasn't guilty of it. But they called him one day from the corporate headquarters and they said, "We're coming to audit your books. Something is not right. This store has always been more successful than it is presently. We don't know where the money's going. Something's wrong." And before they could arrive, he took a gun and put it in his mouth and pulled the trigger. And it all started with an innocent little trip to the casino that was just supposed to be fun. It was just gaming. And you know, when these individuals advertise gambling coming into your area, they're not going to stand right up and say, "We're trying to bring gambling into your area." They're going to do what everyone tries to do, and that's change the language up enough to where it doesn't sound quite as sinister. "We're all about gaming," they'll say. "We're just about playing games." If that's the case, then take the money out of the equation as a reward for winning the game and see if anybody shows up. You know as well as I do that it's not just about having a place to play games. It's about going and being able to get money, 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 and more money. That's what it's all about. I want to say that again in just a moment, but I want to stop and point this out to you, that when it comes to what the casinos are saying, there was a conference in 1976. It was the fourth annual conference on casinos and gaming at that time, as they called it. And one of the statements from that conference is so true as far as their modus operandi. He said, "We have got to quit calling this gambling and start convincing people that we're not into gambling, we're in the revenue business. We're in the business of raising revenues for the state. If you bring the lottery in, you'll have so much money for education, you won't know what to do with it, they claim. If you'll let our casinos come in, we'll give you money like you've never dreamed of to build roads, and we'll improve your whole community. Is that right? I don't know if you've ever been to Atlantic City or not. I never have. But I have read in my preparation for this sermon countless articles about things going on in places where gambling has been for some length of time. I found these statistics. What is gambling brought to Atlantic City? Larceny is up 300% since gambling came into Atlantic City. Assaults are up 110%. Robbery up 151%. Pickpockets went from an average of 15 per year to 544 pickpocket cases a year. 72% of high schoolers have played casinos at least once, and in places where lottery tickets are sold, teenagers are becoming more and more and more involved in purchasing lottery tickets. I think I've read at least half a dozen articles of recent origin which are lamenting the high rate of teenagers involved in gambling. And this is one that's interesting. In Atlantic City, three of the last six mayors have been jailed for various political corruption charges. And this one's very telling. 95% of businesses that were open when the casinos came into Atlantic City are gone. They're closed. Now, why would that mean? It's supposed to bring such revenue in, the businesses will flourish. No, because here's what's happening. Here these casinos are offering you a T-bone steak dinner and a baked potato and a salad for $6.99. And none of the other restaurants in town have any gambling income coming into their coffers from people losing their money in their establishments. And they cannot afford to offer you a T-bone steak at that price. And so people have started flocking to the restaurants in these casinos and started spending their money there instead of at the establishments they had been spending money at. And so the businesses start drying up. And listen to what's happened in convenience stores selling lottery tickets. And Tennessee has just recently approved the lottery in the last year or so. And I was so sad to see it for so many reasons. And I tell you, my first experience in traveling just to stop and get a Diet Coke, I had to wait in line forever, it seemed, behind individuals who looked like they had never been out in civilization at all, and they were all in line, and they couldn't wait to get their lottery tickets, and one lady in front of me plopped down $600 for her lottery tickets, and I had to wait in line. I should have just left, but I had to wait in line for her to have that all calculated up. And then she wanted to stand there and scratch them all off and see if she won anything. And finally, someone suggested to her that she might do that somewhere else. Think about these businesses, these convenience stores. I read statistics that Winn-Dixie, in some places where the lottery has been, used to sell lottery tickets, but they noticed that their sales dropped by almost the exact number of dollars that had been spent at their establishment on the lottery tickets. People used to come in and buy a pack of peanuts and maybe a Diet Coke, and now they just bought the Diet Coke and a lottery ticket, and they were losing sales. Now, I could stand here all night and tell you about all those things, and that wouldn't mean a thing, because, my friends, we're interested in what the Bible says. But the Bible does say, does it not, by their fruits ye shall know them, Matthew chapter 7. And we know that the gambling fruit is bitter and poisonous. It is not at all worth eating. And we need for every society to learn quickly that situations result when you bring gambling in that are certainly not desirable. In fact, bankruptcies are up in Tunica, in the area around where I live. They're the highest rate in the entire United States of America. Bankruptcy is higher there than anywhere else. And we have seen so many cash entitled pawn places crop up. Even in our county where gambling's not been approved, you can go and get your advance check. You can go and you can pawn this and pawn that, and there is such a desperate need for cash so that people can go back down to the casinos. Drunk driving has increased by 500% on the road that leads to the Tunica casinos. It's a mess. But let's talk about Christians and whether we should or shouldn't gamble and why. If you'll turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6 with me, I want to get to the heart of what I want to say. In 1 Timothy 6, notice that in verse 7, actually verse 6 beginning, godliness with contentment is great gain. The root, the trunk, and the branches of gambling is about covetousness. It is about money. It is about wanting to have more money. And again, if you are willing to deny that, then please ask yourself this question. If they told you there will be no reward, financial reward given for the winning lottery ticket, but we will announce your name on television and announce that you're the winner so that everyone will know that you had the lucky ticket, but you don't get a dime for it, how many people would buy lottery tickets just as a game to play? How many people would spin the roulette wheel if there wasn't some monetary reward? How many people would say, let's get in the car and drive 30 miles? Some people, I was out west, I saw a billboard about 400 or 500 miles away from Tunica encouraging people to drive to Tunica and gamble. And I'm thinking, if it was just about playing a game, no one in their right mind would drive that far just to see if it lands on red or black. It's all about dinero. It's all about the money. And Paul knew that money was the root of many things, or I should say this, the love of money, to be accurate. Read it with me, please, in 1 Timothy 6, 7. Godliness with contentment is great gain. People don't go to casinos because they're content with their financial situation. We brought nothing into this world. It is certain we can carry nothing out. So whether you lose like 95% of the people do, or whether you're one of the rare 5% winners, you're still going to lose it eventually. You'll either lose it now when you're trying to get it, or you're going to lose it at the end of time when all things are left behind. It's certain we can carry nothing out. What if you win the Powerball jackpot and you become a multimillionaire? How long will it last? How much of it will you get to take with you? Having food and raiment, Paul says, let us therewith be content. Notice again the word content. Do you know the man with 6 children is more content than the man who has $6 million? It's because the man with 6 children doesn't want any more children, generally speaking. Although I said that one other place, and a man came up to me and said, I'll have you know I have 7 daughters. And I had to say, well, okay, there are some exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, a man who has 6 children, that satisfies him. He doesn't want another one or several more. A man who has $6 million, true or false, that's enough for him. Solomon, if we could take what he made and translate it into some semblance of our modern day currency, someone guesstimated that Solomon would have been worth about $666 million a year. And during his time, that much money would have been unbelievable. He was wealthy beyond description, no doubt about it. And someone may be sitting here saying, look, preacher, I don't need $666 million a year. $66 million would do me just fine. That would be enough for me. Someone else may say, I don't need $66 million. You give me $6 million a year and watch me smile. That smile will never come off my face. Is that right? True or false? Athletes who are making $6 million a year are going to be happy with that amount next year. True or false? You know as well as I do, they may even in the middle of the year go and say, this isn't going to be enough because I found out that so-and-so on another team is making more than me and I'm playing better than he is. So up my contract now or I'll sit out. You've seen it. More and more things. This is not surprising when you read the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon says, been there, done that. I know what it's all about, and nobody has to convince me. I know that I tried to find happiness in things. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, he says in verse 8, I gathered me silver and gold. And what's interesting is Haggai 2:8 says that God owns all the silver and the gold. Solomon gathered it, and God was the one who granted it. Every good and perfect gift comes from above, but Solomon didn't keep it in perspective. He gathered silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. He says in verse 9, I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. My wisdom remained with me. And how much money did he have? Whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. My heart rejoiced in all my labor. This was my portion of all my labor. How many of you have ever had enough money that whatever your eyes desired, you didn't have to keep from them? My mother watches these home shopping channel networks pretty frequently, maybe too frequently. She said one day when I was at her house visiting, she said, Judy must be on vacation this week. I said, who's Judy? She said, the QVC lady. I don't know where she's at. I said, Mom, I think you're getting a little too wrapped up in QVC. But you know what? My mother hardly ever buys anything. She grazes. She looks. She says, oh, that's pretty. I like that. Why don't you buy it? Well, I can't afford it. If you could ever get to the point where you could have enough money to afford whatever you wanted, when you wanted it, the moment you wanted it, you'd be happy, right? That's what Satan wants you and me to believe. That's why people are going to casinos. That's why they're buying lottery tickets. Look, we can either deal with all of the symptoms of the problem of gambling, or we can deal with it at its root cause. It's kind of like the guy that got up some years ago and he was constantly known in his prayer for saying, Lord, please clean the cobwebs out of our life. And finally, one brother couldn't take it anymore. And when he said that in his prayer, he blurted out, Lord, don't do it. Kill the spider instead. And there's a truth behind that that we need to get at. We can either keep treating symptoms, and we can talk about all of the symptoms of the problem and keep clearing them out, or we can get right to the root of what's causing it. Why does gambling even exist? Why does it even appeal to any man, anywhere? And why do even some who would call themselves Christians buy that lottery ticket? Because they want more things. And if they could just have more things, they'd be happy. And Solomon says, don't be so sure. I looked on all the works that my hands had made, all the labor that I'd labored to do. And if you want to know the truth, it was vanity. It was emptiness. It was grasping for the wind. You think you've captured it. You open up your hand and there's nothing there. You don't have anything. If you'll turn to Ecclesiastes 5, you'll notice the statement that is made by Solomon in verse number 10. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. He's going to want gold. He's going to want something even more precious. And he's going to want more silver. And verse 15, as he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came. And here's 1 Timothy 6:7, even before Paul wrote it, inspiration had already recorded this phrase, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. Alexander the Great, I'm told, as he was nearing his death, said to his soldiers, when you bury me, I want you to leave my hands hanging out of the casket. And they thought he was in a drunken stupor again and said, what are you talking about? Leave your hands hanging out of the casket. How morbid. He said, no, I want you to do it because it's suddenly dawning upon me that after all of the wealth I've accumulated, after all the riches I have amassed, I am leaving it empty-handed. I'm leaving this earth empty-handed. I did a funeral some years ago where they did something very unusual. They walked by the casket for the last time, which is not unusual, but as they did so, all of the members of the immediate family deposited two crisp $1 bills into the casket where they remain to this day. Now, you're probably wondering the same thing everyone else was wondering that saw them do that. What were they doing? I don't begrudge their right to grieve as they wish to grieve. And the reason they did it was interesting. This man had said when he was in the hospital, "Look, one of these days, they may discharge me from the hospital and let me out, and none of you may be around. And so I want you to put $2 in my sock so that I have enough money to buy a cup of coffee and a newspaper. Make sure that you always leave me with $2 in my sock." And so to remember this request of his, they all put $2 in his casket and left. Someone told me recently when I mentioned this that they would have gladly written a check for the amount of money that was put in there, and it would have been the same thing. But of course, it wasn't done for that reason. It was sentimental. Look, if they'd put $2 million in the casket with him, what good would that have done that man? So why go and lose one's soul in a quest for things which, according to Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 6, are a snare anyway and have the tendency to keep us out of heaven? It is hard for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. It's not impossible. Abram had a lot of cattle, a lot of silver and gold, but he had God first and foremost in his life. You read of some rich people in the Scriptures, but they are the exception rather than the rule as far as the ones who are faithful. And that is why, no doubt, 1 Timothy 6:9 says, "They that will be or desire to be rich." And that's why people go to gamble. They desire to be rich. And what does that lead to? They fall into temptation and a snare. Paul uses a Greek word here that has to do with a trap that might have like sharp spikes coming out and covered over with dirt so that you can't see it. You step on what you think is dirt and solid ground, and instead find yourself ensnared by the very thing that you were not cautious of. And individuals who say, "Look, just putting a quarter in the slot machine, preacher, you're getting all worked up about nothing. How much harm can that do?" Ask those individuals who pulled that machine for the first time and then went on to become compulsive gamblers and destroyed their families. Ask them how much harm it can do. You say, "I'm going to win." You have, according to statistics that were done in Nevada. And by the way, interestingly enough, Nevada does not have a lottery, won't allow it. They know that they've got enough problems already with the gambling that they have. But this is a statement that I found interesting. Person who buys a ticket every week in a state lottery would win a $1 million prize only once every 115,384 years. So if you like your odds at that and think that's reasonable, no, don't go for it. Because even if you did win, my friends, it wouldn't be right, because just because you get rich doesn't mean what you did was right. A lot of people have done exactly what Proverbs 28 talks about. They have accumulated, and these are the words of Proverbs 28:22, unjust gain. Ezekiel 22:12-13 talks about God rebuking His people for dishonest gain. Now you think of the ways that one can justifiably accumulate money. One, he can go out and work for it. Genesis 3 talks about the work principle. And if a man won't work, neither should he eat, says the Apostle Paul in the inspired Word of God. He says, if a man won't provide for his own, he's denied the faith, worse than an infidel, 1 Timothy 5:8. And so work, that's a legitimate way to bring money in. Second, one can receive a gift. It's okay for me to give you $20 if I so choose. That's acceptable for you to receive that money, as long as there's no bribe or sinister motive attached to it. In the third place, one might find money that they cannot find the owner of. They may find $20 out on the sidewalk and look all around for the owner, and upon not finding him, keep that money. And if attempts have been made to find the owner and you cannot find the owner, then certainly that's a legitimate acquisition of money. But the only other way to get money is by stealing. Let me ask you a question. Into which category does gambling fall? If you win the lottery, if you win at the casinos, did you work for it? Is it a gift that you didn't have to pay anything for?
No.
Is it money that you just found laying around? Well, if you didn't work for it and earn it that way, and it wasn't a gift, and you didn't just happen upon it, that only leaves one other method of gaining that money, and that's by stealing. And robbery is, as has been pointed out so many times by preachers across the years, robbery is theft by consent. It is you and someone else, or you and a lot of others, coming together and saying, I'm willing to risk my money so that it can go into a large pool of money so that one of us can get lucky enough to win that money. And they say, well, as long as it's by consent, are you willing to take that argument to its logical extreme? Are you willing to say that as long as two people do something by consent, that it's okay? What about fornication? Do people ever engage in fornication by consent because they both agree to do it? Yes. And the illustration's been used over the years of two people that are going to duel one another with guns, as they did in times past. Is it okay to duel one another as long as you shoot the guy and he was all up for it? It's okay, according to some. My friends, no one really believes that. Gambling violates the golden rule, Matthew 7:12, which says you do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You don't do unto others and hope they don't do unto you what you're trying to do unto them. That's not the biblical principle, but that's the method that many people engage in when it comes to gambling. I like what the psalmist said in Psalm 37:18, quote, a little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. I'd rather be poor and righteous than wicked and rich. The Bible says in Proverbs 16:8, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. And so even if gambling does purportedly bring in great revenues to the community, so what? If it's wrong to get those revenues in the way that they've been received, then it's wrong whether there are large numbers of them or not. But here's the dirty little secret that all of the gambler promoters don't want you to know. Gambling promoters don't want you to know. All of the promises they make for education and all of the things they're going to do with this money that's coming in, here's what ends up happening. People spend less money at the grocery store. They spend less money buying other goods and services. And so less money is going in through sales tax into the state coffers. And so all of the promises that were being made about the money we're going to use for education, well, sorry, we had to divert some of that to this over here because we're having such a shortfall in our normal sales tax income that we're going to have to get the money from somewhere, and so it comes out of the gambling coffers. And here's another thing that's interesting. Even in Georgia, where the Hope Scholarship is supposed to be the greatest thing that ever came down the pike, the money that is going to students in these scholarships is being distributed to the wealthy individuals and districts of Georgia. But guess where most of the purchases of lottery tickets come from? Not from the wealthy districts, from the poor neighborhoods where people are determined to get some money and to get it quick. Proverbs 28:22, he that hastens to be rich will not be unpunished. He's going to be punished. I want you to think about this with me. The Illinois State Lottery, in the very heart of one of the most depleted ghetto-like neighborhoods in their whole area of Chicago, put up a billboard that said, take a trip from Washington Street or whatever street it was they lived on to Easy Street. And the billboard advertised the casinos or the lottery, I should say, and had these glittery, glamorous-looking pictures. And they planted that billboard right smack dab in the middle of one of the poorest neighborhoods and said, why not go from the street you're living on to Easy Street? And all that did is fuel the fires of making the poor even more poor. You know, it's sad but true. Many of these states who are approving of the lottery, they're becoming predators. That's what they're becoming. They are preying upon the poor and trying to get what they don't even have so that they can give to people who, generally speaking, already do. It's a sad and sad thing. How much time do I have left? 2 minutes. Let me just summarize by some other quick points. And look, there's no way that any speaker will be able to cover these important and vital topics in 35 to 38 minutes. We just have to try to whet your appetite for further study. When you go to the casinos in our area, you're also finding yourself in the midst of evil companionships and liquor. The liquor houses sell more liquor to the casinos than any other establishment. And when you go to the casinos, you're going to be surrounded by other sins, people drinking, people engaged in prostitution even in certain locations, and on we could go. I want to say this as I close. I like this statement and I want to read it about the state lottery because I understand that Oklahoma's thought about maybe trying to get one. Here's the statement from a Tupelo businessman in Mississippi named Jack Reed. He said, quote, "A state lottery simply siphons money that's already being spent or saved by private citizens, including the poor." And I love his analogy. It's like giving yourself a blood transfusion from your left arm to your right arm and spilling half the blood in the process. Now, that's just insane. Gambling doesn't create wealth. It simply redistributes it. And Paul puts it like this in 1 Timothy chapter 6, that if you are going to have a love for money, an inordinate love for money, that you are going to err from the faith, you're going to pierce yourself through with many sorrows. And he closes out by saying in verse number 17, charge them that are rich in this world. Those in verse 9 were those who desired to be rich. Verse 17 is a warning to those who already are rich to some extent. He says, charge them that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God which giveth us richly all things to enjoy. You want to be rich in good works. Verse 18. When I drive by the junkyard and I see those cars that are sitting out there, now nothing but mangled pieces of metal, I think to myself, at one point in time, every one of those vehicles that's now a residency for rats used to be someone's pride and joy, and it's now worthless except for harvesting a few spare parts. Gambling is all about getting more material things, but material things don't last. Your soul does. Let us live so that we can be rich toward God. Most importantly, Luke chapter 12.